Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to the Goddard Report. Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Anita Krishna, founder of AnitaKrishna.com. She was a technical newscast director with Global News in Vancouver. She's on X at AnitaKrishna1, on YouTube at Anita K, on Rumble search Anita Krishna. Anita, welcome to the Goddard Report.
Thank you. So nice to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Can you tell us about your website, interviews, and your ongoing fight to save Canada?
Oh, just that. Oh, that's no small thing. Well, okay, where do I start? I was like a technical person in the newsroom. I was a technical director, a newscast director. So I didn't really have like an editorial component to my job or any editorial control. But when I saw, you know, the narrative shift so badly, I started to speak up and say things, and then I got in a lot of trouble, suspended and what have you. But before I actually got fired for speaking up about our narrative, I wanted to find out. I was just so confused as to whether we were telling the truth about things like the hospitals being full and what the COVID wards looked like, etc., that I went to interview a nurse, and I just went to interview her just for my own peace of mind, or just to talk to somebody. And then she told me what was going on in the Kootenay area in her hospital. And then it was completely the opposite of everything we were reporting. Then other nurses started speaking up. And then I interviewed a former Global News cameraman who ended up in St. Paul's Hospital with COVID. Then I asked him, okay, well, tell me how many people were in the COVID ward with you. And he said three. And I'm like, oh, and that started my interviewing. So I was sort of like an accidental journalist in a way, and that I started my channel on Rumble just to get information. And that's how it kind of started. And then after I got fired, then I started interviewing doctors, people affected by the you-know-what that we can't name if this is going to be on YouTube. You know, I started to speak to people that were standing up for your rights and freedoms, and that's, I guess, how my channel grew. So then I kind of consider myself like a accidental journalist, interviewer, podcaster, commentator, that type of thing. You know, I just do a little bit of a hodgepodge of everything on my channel.
Well, you said you started to see a change in the narrative at Global Television. What kind of changes disturbed you? What kind of things were going on?
The thing that disturbed me the most is the, you know, we're always sensational, right? Because news is, it has a little bit of sensation. So if you're going to report on a fire, you're going to make it dramatic, and that's kind of what makes the show. I was just alarmed at so many people sort of not, well, I guess maybe not that many, but people who are speaking up that we didn't want to hear from. Like, we didn't want to hear from doctors like Byron Bridal, or Dr. Mark Trozzi, or Dr. Paul Alexander, or William Mackis, or Jay Bhattacharya, or Sunitra Gupta, like, you name it. Peter McCullough. We didn't make these people household names, although they were speaking up at the time. And so when COVID was, everybody was losing their minds, and airports were shutting down, borders, and all sports teams, and all the things, all the shutdowns, I was thinking, A, we were panicking without seeing evidence of what was really going on. And then as time went on, after refusal to report on people who were speaking up, I just saw a repression. But then the repression continued because as people started to talk about medications, those became demonized. Everything became politicized. So there was no sort of, hey, let's talk about this. Is there an alternative? Is there something that might make you feel better? No, because if you report about on that or talk about that, then you cannot enforce an emergency used authorized vaccine. And on it went. Anytime I heard of a different report or a death in the clinical trials or anything, I never saw that make the light of day in any newscast that I was directing. Every single newscast was just push it, push it, push it, push it. I'm going to call it the poison apple instead of, you know. So push this thing. This is the thing that's going to save the day. Give it to pregnant women, although this had never been tested on pregnant women. And my mind, my head was going to explode every day I went into work and saw the things that we were putting on the newscast and the absolute refusal to report the other side. That's the first time I ever saw it so bad.
Well, what I have found, the big change on global television over the past 10 years is every story starts off with stunning, shocking, unbelievable. And I went, it's a new sidewalk. I'm not shocked, stunned, or unbelieving of it. And again, if you're showing me, or if you're running this story, well, it must be, you must want us to think it's believable, but you just called it unbelievable. Yeah. So why does every story have to start that way?
Well, that's what's going to hook you in. Oh, it's shocking. It's unbelievable. Oh, my goodness. It's, you
upsetting.
Know, never before seen.
Triggering.
What?
And triggering. What? Well, I don't know if you've been bitten by a chihuahua. I guess maybe a picture of a chihuahua might be triggering. But that was I understand when you say there's disturbing images here.
Yeah.
Because when I got into television news, the news director asked me, you go to a car accident or something like that, what don't you shoot? I said, you shoot everything you can. Then you come back and discuss what should we and what shouldn't we show. And is it necessary, right? But all of a sudden... But, oh, now it's shocking, and we're going to show you. Because we warned you.
Although they have to be careful about that type of thing. And from my time there, I saw that they were pretty careful with that type of thing. You know, we don't show the most gruesome, grotesque images, you know, of car accidents or war or things like that. Gosh, you're making me think of when the Olympics happened in 2010 Olympics, and that loser died.
Oh, yes.
He was from Georgia.
Bash, really? Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, when we saw the feed come in-house, you know, because we all have TV monitors with in-house feeds on our desks in the newsroom, and, oh, my God, I saw his body slam and the life go out of him, and... Oh, my God, it was horrific to watch. It just broke my heart. But we never showed that, because obviously you can't show that.
Yeah.
And we've been very careful with war and any type of, you know, flooding, earthquakes, or where people are being injured. We don't show the most gruesome things, although you see it come down live in the feed.
Now, a major source of television revenue are government ads, or BC Hydro, which is government, or BC Ferries, again, government. Does that limit their ability to cover stories that are critical of government or of BC Hydro? Because they're a major source of money. Or do you think there's a backroom influence? Like, we'll show you a little bit of the story, but we're not going to dig deep into it or make it a major event.
Well, that's a very good question. I guess I never thought about our advertisers and funding. I was just, you know, to be honest, I worked there. I ran the newscast. I did my job. And I worked really hard, because directing a bunch of shows is a lot of hard work. And then when you're done at the end of the day, my day is done, right? The newscast is in the can and on to the next day. If you're a producer, you're constantly looking. What's going on tomorrow? What are we going to look at tomorrow? You're forecasting, right? Now, To my mind and in my memory, I don't really recall us going so hard on Hydro or you know, or BC Ferries. Sometimes we talk about how inept BC Ferries is or things like that. I don't find us going hard. And I find, now that you mention it, I feel like I don't know enough about hydro, how it all works, what's going on, or maybe I wasn't paying attention. But I don't find, and I don't recall any sort of hard-hitting, in-depth things about the company itself. And maybe that's because they are such a big sponsor. We just kind of keep our friendliness about things. And maybe that's always been going on, and I never probably paid attention or noticed it before. But it's a very good point. I've made this point on other podcasts. Like, if somebody sponsors you, you don't go to criticize them. Like, if it's a coffee company, soap company, a lawnmower manufacturer, whoever your furniture company, whoever your sponsor is, you're not about to say, oh, they make shitty furniture. Oh, their coffee sucks. But hey, they paid me. You're never going to talk about them like that.
Well, I can tell you about integrity in a newsroom. When I worked at CKNW in the 80s, we ran a story about a car dealership rolling back odometers. And the salesman who had that account at CKNW came into the newsroom and asked Warren Barker if he could kill that story. And he said, well, normally I would run it twice. But thanks for what you just told me. I'm going to run it all day for 12 hours, every newscast. After that, the sales department decided not to interfere in the news. But that, again, there's newsroom integrity. I've been told that global TV producers are looked at ways, are told to look at ways they can, I don't know if the word is revenueize, if that's even a word, but a way to make money from something. So you have the community updates or whatever, but they're sponsored. And again, could you be critical of that particular community event if it was skimming money or something? Or they just gave you a bunch of money to promote it, so please don't be critical.
Exactly. And that's a good way to promote these events. It's not actually part of the newscast or part of the show. It's almost like a little separate vignette that you roll in the show somewhere, so it looks like a separate thing. And then they can promote.
It looks like it's part of the news, but it's not really news.
But it's not. It's not really. So that's a good way to sort of separate yourself, but still collect the money and give it exposure. But if something negative were to happen with one of those community events, would they report on it? They might, but they probably wouldn't like drag them through the mud so much.
Or only if somebody else like CBC or CTV got onto the story.
Yeah, possibly.
And then you look really stupid if you don't cover it.
Yeah. You do look stupid, but on the other hand, if they're giving you money, how stupid are you going to make them look? You might just sort of skim the thing, although I'm having a hard time sort of thinking of a concrete example, but you'd still sort of cover it, yeah. And also nowadays, you know, where there's some sponsorship going on with coffee cups, Tim Hortons coffee cups on the table.
Oh, yeah. That's gone on forever.
That's gone on forever because you have to make money. You have to sell the helicopter girl, which they don't even show their faces anymore, which I think is totally stupid. But you can put a banner, brought to you by Kermac Collision, blah, 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 right? You know, there's always ways to sell. And if still Kermac was doing something, would we run a proper story? Would we investigate? Good question. Maybe, maybe not.
Are any of your old global coworkers secretly giving you kudos for what you're doing?
No. Hmm. No.
Are they scared to?
I think so. They don't talk to me. I mean, like, everybody knows a very popular sportscaster, the most popular sportscaster there, was probably my best friend for 20 years. This guy would always call me back. There was no, he went to my wedding. There's no, he's been my best, been like an amazingly close friend. He does not talk to me. And I have shown him some videos of mine and some articles, and I've tried to illustrate to him, even when the pandemic was going on, that, dude, we're not really covering the origin. You know, we're saying that this is from a wet market. There's no proof of that. And then I told him all about everything. But he doesn't, he kind of listened, but he didn't, that's it. He didn't talk about it too much more, and he doesn't talk to me. So I find that staggering. There are two people there on Facebook. They just work there. They criticize me. that I'm crazy, that, you know, they just don't make the connection that perhaps these poison apples are causing all this illness and death. And there's so many people that have been ill and some have died at Global, but they don't seem to even connect the dots. And nobody even talks to me. But I know everybody there, most people, and I know people that work there that privately in secret rooms were talking to me about how upset they were by everything, but they never spoke up, and they still continued to do their jobs and collect their paycheck. So do I blame them? I don't know.
No, you keep your mouth shut and get paid. Yeah.
Keep your mouth shut, get paid.
Well, going back to what happened just a couple of days ago, yeah. Canada celebrated its 157th birthday. What do you love about Canada?
Well, I gotta say, I love how big and lush and green and how much space there is and how we're all just generally very polite people. I love the fact that this country is kind of low-key. We just kind of do our thing, and we're kind of low-key, and we don't make a big stink about anything, and maybe we're kind of off the radar that way, and maybe that's good and maybe that's bad. I would say the truckers put us on the radar, but I love the Canadian vibe, the friendly sort of Canadian vibe. We have good manners, we keep to ourselves, but when you kind of strike up conversation, we're friendly, good people, and we are good people that care about each other.
Many people in the media, including broadcasters, are dying at a young age. Do you think the media people are connecting the dots?
I think some are connecting the dots but want to be in denial about it. Some are not connecting the dots at all because you see them on Facebook going, oh, man, I'm so sad to hear that this girl died at 46 from a short battle with cancer. Oh, I'm so sad to hear that this traffic reporter who worked at News 1130 died at age 63 after a short battle of cancer. Oh, this 23-year-old Global reporter in Regina, he just died. You know, there's a director there that just passed from what I believe is a turbo cancer. That's what I believe. And I don't know how much to elaborate on that. I know certain things that are private. She just passed away. She was pretty friggin' sad. And I don't know if those people connect the dots. But if you cannot connect the dots, you're a psychopath. And something is wrong with you if you cannot see how many people are dying. There's a guy there who's a camera, works on the camera desk. He went for a jog and then ended up in a coma. And we know why. It's like, and then the sports guy did a story on him. Oh, he survived the odds. What do you mean he survived the odds? He poison appled himself, went for a jog, and nearly died. What do you think happened? You know, there's people there that post on Facebook, oh, my mother just passed at age 71 suddenly. People that work there, anchors, and they're saying that. And I don't know if they connect the dots. Now, you can't sit there and say, the first thing they're going to say is, people die, you know, Anita, it's not because of that. It's just that there's too much going on.
Well, broadcasting, a lot of us had to get up at 3:30 in the morning, which isn't really good for your body. So a lot of diabetes, heart attacks, and so on. You're living on coffee and donuts, not the best diet. And because of the stress, a lot of smokers.
Yeah. A lot of smokers and a lot of
But I always think about somebody like Kuljeet Kala, probably the traffic reporter you were referring to, sweetest person, but a lot of wireless headsets, wireless everything. So you're living basically in an open-air microwave oven. That can't be good for you. And I don't hear any discussion about that at all.
No, that can't be good for you, but I'm pretty sure we're all living like that. And she had a brief battle with cancer and died at age 46. Like, I knew her well. I think if you listen to Dr. William Mackis, he's an oncologist and cancer researcher, people who take more than two have what's called an IgG shift in their body, and that disables their body from fighting off cancer the way they normally would. So I think it does make an impact, and I've openly just say that. Who knows, because the autopsy doesn't show. And yes, headphones, microwaves, blah 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 are not good for you, But there are people that live long lives and have long battles with cancer. But now people are dying within weeks and months. So I think it's to be noticed.
Mm-hmm. Do you think if all the staff in newsrooms are vaccinated, what are the chances they would run a story on vaccine injuries and death?
Well, because the government sponsors us, like we run government ads. We don't technically run Pfizer ads as far as I see, but there's a partnership, a government partnership between these pharmaceutical companies. They are not likely to ever run these stories. I mean, look how many injured people there are, and look at the absolute media blackout on it, so that regular people who just watch the TV, many of them are my friends, they don't know what's going on. They've never even heard of any type of injury. So they're not likely to run it, because you cannot run anything that creates hesitancy.
We'll have more with Anita Krishna right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Anita Krishna. Anita, do you think any of your old co-workers refuse to get vaccinated?
Refuse to?
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that didn't want to, and there are a lot of people that did it, that feel sick about it, and there are people there that are injured. I know, because they told me. But I don't know. Like, I was fired, and I was fired before the federal mandate came in. So I'm pretty sure all employees that were left there had to take it, or you were gone. But in terms of new employees that might be hired there today, I don't know what the policy is. I really doubt that anyone works there that hasn't taken it in that type of environment. I don't know. How would you survive the lion's den?
You've been shining a light on people you worked with dying from what looks like vaccine injuries. How are your former coworkers responding to you to shining a light on that?
They are either getting mad at me, calling me a conspiracy theorist, saying, how dare I? How dare I ask? And some are not taking it well. I think the people that do know by now are just being quiet and ignoring, because that's what they're very good at. If there's some story going on, like the convoy or anything that's come, Emergency Act hearing or whatever, they just ignore it, or what I call spit on it. They give it such poor, poor, awful coverage. It's almost like it's just like spitting on the story. That's what they do. So they ignore me or call me names. That's pretty much how they act.
Well, politicians are famous for saying, how dare you ask that question? Brian Mulroney would be like that. And I said, well, sir, I dare ask the question, and I would appreciate an answer.
Yeah.
How dare you ask? I mean, to me, asking questions is what this job is all about. I don't have to agree or disagree with the person I'm interviewing. I would appreciate, though, you called a news conference. Now, let me ask questions. Also, what's your opinion of people calling news conferences? You get there, they make a statement, and then they say, I'm not taking questions. I would call them out and say, I'm not being paid by you to carry this. I don't carry propaganda. I carry news stories. If you don't answer my questions, I'm not running your story.
Then it's not a press conference.
That's exactly.
Exactly. Don't invite the press, make a statement, and then walk away. You have to answer. It's a press conference. You've invited the media. Take the questions from the media, particularly if you're a politician whose information is going to get out there so that people can decide on whether to vote for you or not. So you should want to answer questions if you've got the courage and good ideas and whatever. I mean, anybody who says, I'm not taking any questions, you can take a seat. We don't want to hear from, well, then goodbye. Next.
Yeah.
You know, don't call a press conference.
I'd say if you're just going to tell one side of the story, call our sales department and buy an ad.
Precisely.
Do you think media companies are concerned that they could get sued for promoting the experimental medical procedures?
I sure hope so. Because all of this misinformation was fueled primarily by the media. the fact that people argue with their grandma and their sisters and their families is because of the media. So they think that they saw a couple of doctors on the TV saying, do this, do that, take it. They think that they've done their research. It's like, you have not looked into anything. And I find that the people on the freedom side have almost become scientists because we look so hard. We've looked so hard for years, and we read all the literature, and we listen to all the doctors that are speaking up in docs. So I don't know. I mean, like, can they be sued? I certainly hope some sort of class action or something becomes of it. Because look at what they've done. How do you get away with this? There's no accountability, like, for people who ended up in wheelchairs, paralyzed from the neck down, like that girl named Kayla. And my cousin became paralyzed from the neck down, too, which I told those losers at Global about it. They didn't care. But he can walk now, but he was paralyzed for 4 months at the age of 24. How do you just become paralyzed? He took, you know, two of them, and then he was paralyzed. And then he's in the hospital. He doesn't know what the hell happened to him. He didn't fall out of a plane. He didn't go skydiving or whatever. He just fell down in the shower and then couldn't walk for 4 months. Is that okay? That's okay with you? How about you report that, Global?
Well, having allergic reactions to vaccines, that's not uncommon. When I was a little child, I was allergic to most vaccines, and I didn't get most of my shots until I was older in high school, when they say you outgrow your allergies, and I didn't have any adverse reactions. But doctors were very aware of it. Are you aware of any doctors being told you have to give the shot, whether you think it's good or bad for your patient?
I don't hear any doctors, including my own regular family doctor, criticize it. They just say, no, well, I gave it to my family. No, it's safe. And my doctor said, you think I would give it to my kid if it wasn't safe? Yeah. What do you know? I mean, like, you do know things, but you just do what you're told. Otherwise, your license might be pulled, or you are also given directives from the top down, like from the College of Physicians and Surgeons. So you have to do what they say. Otherwise, bye-bye degree, bye-bye practice. So, doctors, I mean, most GPs have to promote it or say it's okay. The ones that speak up and say, hey, wait a minute, they're under threat of losing their license.
Do you know if doctors in BC were given incentives to jab as many people as possible?
Do I know if they were given incentives? I think there were monetary incentives, but I am not too sure about that one. Not too sure. What the kickbacks were, or what have you. I'm not sure. I know hospitals were given kickbacks for declaring how many cases, COVID cases they had, right? But the doctors, individually, I don't know what they got to promote it, if they did, you know?
What caused you not to get the vaccines?
I don't like anybody telling me to take something, and I don't have good reactions with things. Like, I have, like, you know, I could take an allergy medication and have a terrible reaction to it, whereas my son could take it and he doesn't. So I just don't want to take things, and I wasn't sick with anything. I have not been, knock on wood, sick in 4 years. So why would I take something, some stupid injection? I don't know what the hell is in it. And you're forcing me, or I'm fired? Or you're going to fire the nurses? Are you sick? Are you insane? Yeah, you are. And the way we marketed it, the way we portrayed it, oh, you're locked up, your business is shut down, you can't hug your grandma. See, you want to live this life? You better take this vaccine. This is going to save the day. Well, you don't want to take it? Oh, you're awful. Screw your freedom. Like, that type of messaging, I just couldn't process. I couldn't fathom it. It's so morally reprehensible. And I don't want it. I don't take Tylenol, so don't make me take something. Get away from me. That's it. That's all I wanted. I just didn't want to take it. And then look at all what happened. And then when I started looking into it, then look at what we all have uncovered since. Yeah, I just didn't want it. I don't like anybody forcing me to do things. I don't like pharmaceuticals, particularly. Yeah.
There's a provincial election in BC this year. The current government's making changes to the voting process. Should any of the following be of concern to British Columbians? Changing of electoral boundaries, mail-in ballots, paper ballots fed into vote counting electronic tabulators, election officials using laptops to check voter information to see who has already cast a ballot, printing up of and casting of ballots at polling stations that are not the voter's assigned polling station.
Well, it was always my understanding, my rudimentary understanding, that for federal elections, everything was done on paper and then hand counted by a proper ballot, and that we don't really use electronic ballot systems. And for provincial elections, I think it's primarily the same. So from what you've heard, they're going to make changes to this and try to do things more electronically. Is that what you've heard?
Yeah.
So how would they do that? I mean, through the laptops or through, you know, I'm not sure the ins and outs of all that. I think I'm more into sort of counting the paper ballots. And we should be marking them in pen, not pencil. And I think your riding should be very clearly defined as you're riding. And, you know, basically 100 years, we've done the first past the post thing. I mean, there's some, you know, there's always been a debate about whether that's the best way to go, because maybe it isn't. It's like whoever gets the most votes in that riding, that party becomes the majority. You know, I don't know. I think you should just hand count these damn things. And then if there's any question, recount them again, and then put the numbers out there. I don't think we should be getting into, and you should always show ID. And it should be very carefully done, you know, like who's voting. I have no problem with mail-in voting, if you fill a form or whatever. So, but it's paper. Still, it's on paper, and that should all be counted by hand. Or, you know, counted manually, I would say.
Did Prime Minister Justin Trudeau make a fortune on vaccine stocks?
I believe he did. Because, him and his government, I mean, he has ties to Arbutus and Arcutis, and that's out of UBC, these pharmaceutical companies that make the lipid nanoparticles. And they have a connection with Pfizer also, and it's linked in also with the BC government. Perhaps that's why our nurses can't go back to work here, or any of our healthcare workers. Like, there's something special in BC about us, that we, no jab, no job. And whatever was behind, you know, buying 10 shots for every man, woman, and child in Canada, what was the incentive behind that? Now, you can only surmise that it was financial incentive, and that he was making whoever his superiors are happy by doing that. I mean, he's also a puppet, you know, of some sort. But this is racketeering. This is conflict of interest. You know, you bought these, and you are mandating we all take these. What the hell is that? In the meantime, you terrorize everybody into wanting to take it. No.
Is there an argument to be made that each province should become its own nation state?
I don't know about that, because, you know, BC is very rich in natural resources and lumber and logging, but do we have enough to drive our economy as a nation? I don't know. I mean, Canada is a big country with a lot to offer as a whole. We have a bond. We have different things in different provinces, like the Maritimes and the ocean, all the fishing and lobster and what have you, the prairie provinces and the grain and all that. I mean, I think we have a lot to offer as a country as a whole. I don't know economically how we'd survive if each province was its own nation state. If that is enough to drive each individual economy, I don't know. But I could say our deputy prime minister sure has a huge hand in our government in wrecking our economy. They're doing everything they can to wreck it with taxes and capital gains taxes and all that people don't want to have their businesses here anymore. People want to pull out and take their money elsewhere. So that's not good. So I can't see how having each province as a nation state would help. I don't know. I don't see that right at the moment. Mm.
Yeah, and federal interference in provincial revenues. BC salmon farms produce our biggest agricultural export, farm salmon. It's a major employer for First Nations people, according to Stuart Muir of ResourceWorks. Yeah, Ottawa's canceling that.
Oh, I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. They're canceling the farm salmon?
Yes, in 5 years.
Okay. Now, there are some people that do have a problem with farm salmon. They don't like to eat farm salmon. So, you know, people have their own peculiarities about it. Some people don't care. As long as it's regulated and humane and done well, I mean, I don't know, but that's a big industry to want to take away, you know.
Why don't they just take measures to mitigate problems like sea lice and the waste produced by the fish? I have a cousin in England who uses shipping containers that have fish and vegetables in them. They use the fish droppings to fertilize the vegetables. They put them behind restaurants in London so the restaurant can serve fresh vegetables and fish. There's alternatives like that to look at as well.
Absolutely. Look at the alternative. Make it better. Trust the people who are
Canadians are terrific at improvising, giving the chance and getting the government out of your face.
Exactly. Like, the farmers know how to farm. They know what to do. Look at that example that you just cited about your friend in England. So he knows. I don't have expertise in that industry, but I certainly wouldn't shut it down before I tried to make it better. How dumb are you? When you do things like that, you are just crippling the economy. And for what? Who are you trying to please by doing this? Like, yeah. Who are you pleasing? Who are you working for? Christian Freeland, Trudeau, various other political people around here? You know, I mean, it makes me think of the WEF and all the, you know, the whole schmozzle with what all they're doing. But what are you doing? Like, sometimes, I don't know. Whatever path they're on doesn't make sense to me. And we want to get off this ride now. We're kind of done, you know?
Does mainstream news deserve to be called fake news?
Yes. Yes, in the sense that they can tell a story about a local traffic accident or a local little mudslide or something, and they can tell that fairly decently and honestly. But there are a lot of things, there's just too much that has been going on that has been too one-sided for too long, much of which I didn't really realize till recently. But we are pushing a narrative that, you know, misinformation is one thing. They define misinformation as something that you're just sort of innocent and you've shared something, but you don't quite know it's true. Disinformation is the intent to harm. And so what I think the mainstream media has been responsible for is disinformation. Because even whether they knew they were going to harm people or not, they did. So that's one thing. But also they don't tell the truth about or go in depth about where our money goes, what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in Palestine, how this has really started. And we just tell surface stories in 2 minutes. And I don't think they're comprehensive or tell the truth. So I would say there's lots of fake news. Not all, but so much fake news on your major network newscasts.
What do you think lies ahead for mainstream media, television, radio, and print?
I think they are crumbling so hard, so fast. Layoffs left, right, and center. And I think they what they did to Canada and what they did media outlets around the world, it's irredeemable. They are irredeemable now. And they haven't asked for forgiveness. So you go woke, you go broke. So they're going to go broke. This isn't even going woke. This is just maniacal. So if you want to continue, I think Trudeau just gave CBC an extra, I don't know, kajillion dollars just recently, right? So they already make too much money. So nobody is watching. So advertisers are going to have a hard time. So people are looking for alternative news sources. So they are dying. They've lost our trust. They are done. So if global news, CBC, CTV, radio stations want to continue, you better become subscriber-based like everyone else. Everyone else, like all of us podcasters and whatever, have to hustle, right? We have to say subscribe or whatever. Or we have to find other ways to cultivate revenue. You could have subscribers. So global, you're so good. You're such hot. You know, you're so hot. Then I was going to swear, but I stopped myself. Become subscriber-based. And if you can survive that way, survive that way. And if you can't, you can't. But make it a level playing field. You know, they're done, I think.
There's rumors on the internet of the demise of Global's parent company, Corus. Are you hearing anything from the inside?
No, I'm not hearing anything from the inside. I just see the people just share with me, excuse me, the market share numbers. You can see the dive and the decline of the shares. But I don't have any inside information. But we can see they are losing money. And just recently, one of their big sort of global national anchors left. And then there was all this scuttlebutt that she got laid off or they let her go. But then on air, she said, "I'm leaving to do other things. La-di-da. It's been a great place." Has it? You know, they kick you out very unceremoniously. When they want to be done with you, they are done with you. They take you to lunch, and then you're fired. That's what happened to an anchor I worked with in Kelowna. He had no idea. All the bigwigs invited him for lunch, so he went out for lunch, and they're like, "You need to retire, okay? We're laying you off." And he was like, "What?" And they basically gave him no choice, and so he had to pretend, because I was directing his shows, that everything was hunky-dory, and he was leaving on his own. He didn't want to leave. He was an older anchor. He was not old in a bad sense, old in that he was seasoned and experienced and he had a lot to give and he didn't want to quit, but they made him quit. And so on TV, he was like, "Oh, la-di-da, I'm going off. Yeah, time for other things." No, you were forced to do that. And it's dirty, but that's how they do.
Anita, where can people follow you and see your interviews?
Okay, you can follow me on X, Anita Krishna One. You can go to my website, anitakrishna.com, and that'll link you to all the things that I do. And so that's how you can also find me on Rumble. And on YouTube, you can find me at Anita K, no space.
Anita, thank you so much for being on the Goddard Report.
Mr. Goddard, thank you so much. It was just an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to catching up again sometime.
My guest has been Anita Krishna, founder of AnitaKrishna.com. If you have any questions for Anita or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our popular YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at Talk Digital Net. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. The Goddard Report is available online and mobile at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. The Goddard Report is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.